from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Support for the legislature today is provided by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Learn more at aarp.org/WV. The Charleston Gazette Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest news, traffic, and weather alerts, keeping you in the know while you're on the go. Lumos Networks, online at lumosnetworks.com. Marshall University, with more than 100 degree programs offered in 4 locations and online. More about the Marshall family at marshall.edu. Orion Strategies, professional public relations, government affairs, creative services, and research and polling, with offices in Charleston, Buchanan, Martinsburg, Pittsburgh, and Columbus.
Good evening and welcome to the Legislature Today from the State Capitol Building. I'm Suzanne Higgins and joining me, senior reporter Dave Mistich. Dave, Senate Bill 451, the big education bill, passed out of the Senate today. We saw almost every member stand and speak for or against. Literally every component of this bill was spoken to today.
That's right. We've heard everything from the bill's constitutionality, the non-severability clause, charter schools, education savings accounts. In the end, the bill did pass on an 18-16 vote. We should note that Republicans Senator Bill Hamilton and Senator Kenny Mann voted against the bill. Not a big surprise there, we should point out. Along this process, as it went from the Education Committee, skipped Finance, went to the Committee of the Whole, virtually every step of the way, Senators Hamilton and Mann broke with the Republican majority, voted against some of the procedural aspects of the bill, and then in the final vote, voted against it as well. We heard all sorts of arguments, as you pointed out, from Democrats. We'll go ahead and take a look at some of the various arguments they made on the Senate floor today.
The metaphor I've come up with, Mr. President, I had to go back to 107 years to come up with the best metaphor. And you're not going to like the way this story ends. I'm sorry. April the 10th of 1912, a massive ship departed Southampton, the RMS Titanic. 5 days later, it hit an iceberg. We know what happened. Sadly, Captain Edward Smith went down with the ship. Thank you.
This bill is the Christmas tree of all Christmas trees. It's like putting a 10-foot Douglas fir in a room with an 8-foot ceiling. It does not fit, and it will not work. And Christmas also, I have fond memories of a child. A Christmas tree is usually topped with an angel or a star. This behemoth of a Christmas tree is topped with a non-severability clause, which adds insult to injury and slaps 20,000 West Virginia educators and 8,000 plus service personnel right in the face.
Now, hearing the testimony on the floor was different than what we heard during the questions and answers and amendment stages the other day. They were actually opposite, because I heard words like maybe, possibly, could be, and that word I really hate to hear, it'll be negotiated later. Folks, we don't have a charter school before us, not a charter school bill. What we have simply is a conceptual school idea. We as legislators should have some input into the rules later on and how it's going to be implemented and what the curriculum should be across the board. Well, guess what? There's not an agency that can craft those. There's this loose idea of a commission or a school board that's not affiliated with our Board of Education that's out there. So there's not an opportunity for rules to be worked on and brought back for us to review and approve or amend.
But now coming up with this bill, is the ultimate deception of that shiny object. Let's distract them from it. Let's turn people away. Let's get teachers to say to their members, their representatives, you know what? I don't want my pay raise if I got to accept all this other garbage, or quoting our governor, dog mess, okay? I don't want it. I don't want my pay raise. We have gotten teachers to the point where, and service personnel say, don't give me the pay raise if I got to take all this. Boy, Mr. President, what deception and deceit that we are showing here.
And the arguments against continued for, like we said, the remarks went on for a couple hours. One of them was that they were taking, that the Republicans were taking the position papers of national organizations, national think tanks, and this just didn't have the local buy-in or input.
That's right. And we heard that all along from Democrats over the course of this. Republicans, on the other hand, are basically saying that education in West Virginia is in last place. They were arguing that we need a complete and total overhaul to fix the problems across the state as far as education goes, and that the concerns of educators and their unions fall short, and that they're too, I guess, apprehensive about making these changes that are so grand and are sweeping. So here we'll take a look now at some of the arguments that Republicans made in support of the bill. Again, it did pass today on an 18-16 vote.
Let's not be so afraid. Let's not be so afraid that in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, we'll have a couple charter schools in this state. I mean, is that our fear? That in 3 years from now or 4 years from now, there'll be a couple charter schools in West Virginia? That the fear of that is gonna cause us to not do all these other critical things that need to be done for the children of West Virginia and their children.
The time has come, Mr. President. We can wait no longer. Our children deserve it. And that is who, first and foremost, when I sit down and I get the opportunity to press the green light and vote yes, that's who I'm looking out for first. And when we get these children educated, they're going to grow up to be responsible, drug-free adults, ready to go to work in West Virginia. And it's our job to make sure that we can get the businesses to locate here and the current businesses here to expand, to give them an opportunity to raise their family, make a living, and have a life in West Virginia like we've all experienced here. It's a good thing. We are West Virginia.
This bill just isn't about charter schools. This bill just isn't about ESAs. This bill is about a lot more than that, Mr. President, and that's why it's called comprehensive reform. Because of everything that goes into it, and those are the things that we want to see kept together to reform the system. I'm just going to leave these two stats, Mr. President. Right now, in the state of West Virginia, if you have a son or a daughter that's in the eighth grade, only 39% of those are proficient in math or reading. Right now, there are 61% of our eighth graders in the state who are not proficient in math and reading. And that is a shame, Mr. President, and that's what this bill is trying to address.
We had 3,000 children leave our school system last year. Where do you think those kids went? They went out of state to better schools. Most of them did. Some of them were homeschooled. Some of them went in private schools if they could afford it, but most of them could not. We cannot keep doing this. We cannot keep losing people. Every time a child leaves this state, a family leaves this state, out of those 3,000 children, how many people do you think our state lost in population last year alone? This has got to stop. Nothing is being done. Nothing's being improved. No one's making any decisions to do anything. And we've got to do something.
And Suzanne, I do want to point out that before this went to a vote, There were some senators that asked for a ruling on Rule 43. That's about, you know, whether or not, you know, your vote would impact you, benefit you, yes or no. Should point out that Senators Roland Roberts, Corey Palumbo, and Kenny Mann all requested a ruling on that. Senate President Mitch Carmichael ruled that they were a part of a class and thus had to vote on the bill. You know, after this bill passed, Republicans in the majority gathered outside the Senate chamber, and we'll take a quick look at what Senate President Mitch Carmichael had to say about the passage of this bill.
There are very few moments in the life of a public servant that we, and in the Senate or in the House, when you cast a vote, you know you have set a course for absolute positive change in the state. Many of the bills that we see come through are, you know, code changes and relatively small items and so forth. This is a bill that you were here today to witness that fundamentally changes the lives and the prospects and the opportunities for our students, teachers, and parents in this state to take us from last place to first place. This is a time that the entire state of West Virginia can coalesce around the prospect of achievement, change, and prosperity in our state.
And we also caught up with Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso, the leader of the Democrat caucus, about the process of this bill. And we'll take a quick look at how he responded to the passage of Senate Bill 451.
Every issue was debated three or four or five or six times. We probably were repeating ourselves a lot, but I'll give my Democratic caucus a lot of credit. You know, they put a lot of hours into the research and tried to intelligently debate the issues and things of that sort. And I think they, you know, people were listening out there. I think that they'll see, you know, that we tried to do the best we could and try to make this bill better, but it was destined for an 18-16 vote from the very beginning.
Join us now from our Morgantown station is Shayla Klein, who has been following the education debate online for us. Welcome, Shayla. Tell us who and what is being posted.
Hello, Suzanne and Dave. This first tweet comes from Senate President Mitch Carmichael. He caused some controversy yesterday when he tweeted an explainer graphic from the organization Our Students First. He says, "It's time we put our students first. It's time we pass comprehensive education reform." Kimberly Earle from Our Students First responded, creator of the Students First artwork here. This is an unauthorized use of my work. This work was not created to support the charter schools or this bill. Such use is misleading the public."
And of course, Dave, Our Students First is a big education coalition, many, many teachers, and not very fond of the Senate president.
That's right. And I will point out that this caused, you know, quite the conversation last night on Twitter. I actually reached out to Kimberly Earle. She sent me some emails about this logo in process. Heard from some other folks that were asking Senate President Mitch Carmichael for an apology on this. And I did get a response from the Senate president. He basically said that I'll read really quickly from this. "Special interest in people who oppose this bill first wanted to talk about how fast it came out of the Education Committee, then how the Senate has met as a committee of the whole, and now a logo. The real story is not about a logo, but rather an education system in the state that is letting our students down and not giving West Virginians the very best." I should also point out that, you know, he wanted some folks over there in the Senate that work in his office wanted to point out that that did not come from, you know, his communication staff, that was part of his political arm. As we all know, here around the Capitol, we have folks that work as public servants for the state and those that are working in the background for other PR efforts.
All right, Shayla, I think we have time for some reaction. Anything to that particular post?
Well, response to the bill has been pretty mixed. West Virginia teachers on Twitter seem to be overwhelmingly against the bill. Teacher Jessica Salfia tweeted a GIF from the movie The Breakfast Club that says, "You don't even count. I mean it. If you disappeared forever, it wouldn't make a difference." And the caption to the GIF reads, "The West Virginia Senate to the literal thousands of people asking for a discussion and proper procedures on the educational omnibus bill. Why the rush, fellas? Does Alec pass out bonuses for faster opening of a charter school?" Meanwhile, the Cardinal Institute is vocal about supporting the education bill, particularly charter schools, saying regardless of families' household income, religion, or ethnicity, charter schools provide a high-quality public school option for all students.
And Dave, the debate will continue. It's headed to the House now.
That's right. And, you know, we've heard before that the House Speaker, Roger Hanshaw, has committed to the pay raises and funding for PEIA. It's sort of unknown where he falls on the bill as a whole. A lot of components to this bill. House Democrats, of course, against it in its current form. We'll see if this goes to the Education Committee or another reference. You know, who knows, we might see a committee of the whole over there. But right now, I think we're waiting to see. The House will receive this message tomorrow. They'll reference the bill as they see fit. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
All right, Dave Mistich, thank you so much. Shayla, thank you from Morgantown. Both the House and Senate are considering legislation that would expand adult drug court in West Virginia. Senate Bill 62 would require participation before the discharge of certain first-time drug offenses. And House Bill 2686 would implement a pilot program for family drug courts in five counties. Tonight, an in-depth look at the largest adult drug court in the state, through the eyes of administrators and participants.
Drug court was a very pivotal moment in my life. I had robbed a CVS pharmacy April 9th, 2009. And I had some other stuff previously from the year 2007 that I got in trouble for. And Judge Ferguson made it clear to me that he wasn't playing, that this wasn't a game, and they sentenced me 7 to 31 years for all three of those charges that I had, and they suspended that sentence to drug court. So I got a reprieve, I got a stay of execution, and if I could do this thing and I could finish this program, I could stay out of prison. So when the pain of remaining the same becomes greater than the pain of change, we change.
For Zach Melba of Huntington, West Virginia, that need to change came more than 8 years ago, and he was no stranger to pain. It's what triggered his turning to alcohol and drugs in the first place. Like so many people who develop a substance use disorder, Zach experienced a devastating trauma in childhood.
My mother did leave when I was three, and I didn't see her again until I was 33. You can call that a trauma. You know, as a young child, you know, you have questions of, am I not good enough? What was wrong with me? Even as a kid, I was really disconnected. And that feeling of being disconnected from everybody around me left me with a big empty hole. And I filled that hole with whatever would fill it the quickest. And it turned out to be drugs and alcohol.
Judge Greg Howard, a circuit court criminal judge, presides over Huntington Drug Court today. The alternative sentencing program combines probation with mental health and substance use disorder treatment to reduce recidivism by halting drug abuse. It's a job Howard has taken on voluntarily, work for which he does not get paid. His is the biggest drug court in the state, with an average of 60 participants at any time. A little over 50% will successfully graduate.
When someone comes before me in a criminal case, the first thing we look at is make sure it's not a violent offense. What we're looking for is people who just have an addiction problem. We're not typically looking at someone who is peddling drugs or distributing drugs. We're looking for more end users, people who just have an addiction problem. Oftentimes that addiction leads to property crimes and things of that nature. At that point, I look at the person's history, their background, and then we make a decision to refer them to drug court. Once that process starts, they go through the probation department. Probation takes a very close look at them, and then we decide if we all feel that they're a good candidate.
Matt Meadows is one of two probation officers serving Huntington Drug Court.
They're not happy. And I think that's one thing that people seem to misunderstand about those that are addicted, is that they are partying all the time, that their life is nothing but one party after another. And these folks, most of these folks that I come into contact with, are only, most of them used to keep from getting sick, and are not happy. They're miserable. They are absolutely desperate in the condition that they're in, and want the consequences of those behaviors to stop. Now, they want their family back. They want their kids back. They want a job and pay their own bills and have an apartment or a house. Those are things that they want.
Once you've made the decision that this person needs rehabilitation, they're worth it, they want to try it, and they're at that stage in their life where this could take with this person, then you have to be, you have to have a certain level of compassion to really work with people like that, because probably 95% of the time there's going to be slip-ups, and we have measures that we can take to kind of tighten up the supervision, tighten up the things they have to do, but ultimately our goal is to get them to that drug-free lifestyle that they once knew. Most of them, you know, at some point before addiction had a normal life, and we're trying to get them back there.
I'm amazed at what drug court, and I don't want to say drug court does this. Drug court doesn't do this. They do this themselves. This is something that they choose to do. This is a journey that they take on their own. This is on them. But the things that drug court has been able to help facilitate have been nothing short of a miracle.
Zach Melba describes the first of four phases of the drug court program.
You go to 5 12-step meetings a week. You take 3 or 4 drug screens a week. You see your PO twice a week. You go to drug court once a week. You go to relapse prevention class, drug and alcohol education class, and you work a full-time job. So they taught me how to live life, all while holding me very much accountable for the things that I had been doing to supply my habit. And I got into a 12-step program, and I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps, and it started to change my life.
Phases 2 and 3 step down slowly in their intensity. Participants start paying court fees and slowly regain privileges. You can complete phases 1 through 3 in a year, but most will likely get sanctioned for infractions along the way, adding time to their program. Judge Howard says local organizations are providing significant resources, expertise, and support. Those include churches, volunteer groups, sober living homes, treatment programs, Marshall University and Marshall Health, and the University Pharmacy and Medical Schools, among many others.
The number of resources, the number of people, businesses, volunteers who have stepped up and given us resources to use through our drug court is, I think, just a great reflection on the people of this community who are committed to getting people who need help the help they need.
Phase 3 ends with a drug court graduation, a celebration with family and friends. Then comes Phase 4, aftercare.
Essentially, aftercare is probation. And we like to keep that hook, so to speak, just in case there's a problem. Then they can be pulled back in and say, not quite ready yet. Let's try this again. And when they've completed aftercare, then technically they're completely finished with drug court, and then they would remain on probation with me for whatever time would be left on that 3-year probation term that they have.
We've reduced the burden on the state, reduce the burden on taxpayers of just filling up prisons with people who are addicts. So we've provided a resource not only to these families that we're helping, but also to the taxpayer by using these alternative means. And so I think in recent years, government, so to speak, the judiciary has become kind of enlightened on how to better handle people who have substance abuse problems.
I took so much for granted in life, being given so many opportunities and to burn them and throw them away, that it showed me the greater purpose in life, and that's my family.
You realize that what you've done here, what you've invested in this person, was worth it.
8 years after graduating drug court, Zach Melba is married, working in construction, owns a beautiful home in Ritter Park, and is raising a family.
Life in sobriety is amazing. Life in recovery, whatever you want to call it, it's just life. We deal with the addiction. The addiction is such a small part of what's wrong with those who are addicted, whether it be drugs or alcohol. But I live a life second to none today. I remember getting off of drug court, off of probation, and they say the true test of a man is what he does when he thinks no one's watching. And that was my moment where I made a decision. I made a decision then, you know, you're at the turning point. Do you go back and do what it is that you used to do that's comfortable, that's still familiar for you? Or with a year of sobriety at this point, and things going in the right direction in life, do you continue on the path that you're on? And I remember very plainly the day after my discharge at work, on a hillside, just working, mowing grass, weed eating. I remember like it was yesterday, making that decision.
And we'll be following those drug court related bills as they continue through the legislative process. Tomorrow on the Legislature Today, it's AARP here at the Capitol. We'll focus on the organization's legislative priorities this session. I'm Suzanne Higgins for everyone here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us. Have a great evening.